Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull. That's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Seachtain, an Indo as Gaeilge.
Time I mon iarracht I aon of chacht ar a chur, agus suilgam a machan seo, gur féidir é a chur in uig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltí, fís, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhéadach ara I gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gináim go raibh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthchar san I lis dúthail agus gimine fnacht gór a chlig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhín ann dár dárach sin, bhín marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
I applied for Founders and the first day they brought us in to do just like a networking event where everybody was there. There was 42 of us, I think. They encouraged us to just chat and talk about what we were looking for in a co-founder. I knew what I wanted going in there. So I knew I wanted someone really, really technical. They all put us into a room and they said, start networking and figure out who you guys want to work with. There's a few different activities that they did with us around ideation and coming up with ideas and working together in different groups. But essentially, it was meet each other. You guys, when we start the program, which was 2 weeks after the first day that we met, they said that you guys are going to have to decide on your teams, come up with an idea, validate it, and at the end of the week, decide if you want to keep on working with each other.
Hello and you're welcome to the Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Weckler. What does it take to build a startup? What kind of person does it suit? What kind of mentality do you have to have? And what do you do when you get there? Well, I'm joined today by Aisling Bran, who's the co-founder of Glitch, which is a brand new startup from Dogpatch Labs, which came out of a kind of a speed dating competition, one of the most prestigious in Ireland. You're welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, exciting.
Now, we'll get to Glitch, which is your startup, in a few minutes, but you've had quite a few roles in different companies and organizations and other startups over the last decade, the last of which was the head of European partnerships at the Irish e-commerce unicorn, Wayflyer. But is this the first startup that you've run yourself?
Yes. Yeah, it's the one I've founded myself. Mm. But in loads of the startups I've worked in, I've kind of created joint ventures with partners. Mm. So I've always kind of created little mini businesses within businesses, but I've never taken on the risk myself.
So you've had the mentality and you've had the mindset. But what did you have to think about before embarking on your own startup? I mean, I can only imagine what that's like, having not done it myself. Do you have to think about, you know, your life, your financial reserves, whether you'll get another job if things don't work out?
Yeah, you have to think about all of those things. And I think my husband is really supportive. And I've always had the entrepreneurial kind of itch. Yeah. And I think Wayflyer in particular made that itch even, I needed to scratch it even more after experiencing like all the amazing stuff from there. And also, I'm not going to lie, when I left Wayflyer, I was interviewing for jobs, getting to the final round of everything and not actually getting the jobs. And I was talking to a group of my friends and one had done an MBA in Cambridge and her professor was like, take off your engagement ring, girls. Started to take off my engagement ring and started to get offered roles.
No.
And I just, yeah. Yeah. And I decided I don't want to work somewhere where they just want me because they don't want me if I'm married or if I have kids. So
they were profiling you?
Massively so. Which is, I've always worked in quite male dominated environments. And I met loads of people always say, you know, oh, you're a female in a male dominated environment. What's that like? And I never really experienced any negativity until 12 months ago.
Incredible.
Yeah. So I was profiled and it forced me. And I think that kind of, I had the itch and I had, and that really gave me the fire that to kind of stir me up to go.
To really get into it.
Yeah.
And did having several roles in those startup-like organizations, Wayflowers, a couple of others as well.
Yeah.
Did that make it easier? Maybe figuring that something else would come up afterwards, potentially.
In terms of like...
taking the leap, thinking that you would be capable enough to do something else afterwards.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I have friends that have set up their own businesses and they've inspired me as well. So I don't think there's anything to... I always said there's nothing to lose. So I might as well go for it. And then the Founders Program gave you the like launch pad to actually go and do it. So they gave you all the tools, the things that you freak out about not knowing, they almost gave them to you.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute because it's kind of really interesting. So Wayflower, you go into Wayflower, you're joined at a time when it's exploding. I think it's around the time that it did its Series A round, or I think it was about 70 million or so.
75 million, I believe.
It got incredible for an Irish company.
Yeah.
What's it like going in there?
Oh, it was amazing. Everyone always asked me, what was it like in there? And it was exactly what you would envision a Silicon Valley, high growth, crazy, amazing business to be like. Everyone is smart. They have autonomy to make decisions. You're moving really quickly. You're breaking things and learning from them. And it's high stress, but really good fun at
the same
time.
There's a lot of money involved as well.
Yeah. And that's like, it was really stressful, but I buzz off the stress. Mm. And maybe that's why I set up my own business.
Yeah. And you were head of European partnerships, was that it?
So Wayflower raised a 75 or whichever it was. And they're, with that money, they wanted to expand into Europe. So they set up sales teams, predominantly Spain, the Netherlands. And my job initially was to come in and see how we could partner with enterprise partners across different European regions to enter into those markets alongside sales. Mm. And when we were there, my role changed massively, like it does in many, like very typical to many startups. And I ended up managing more strategic partnerships. So I was managing relationships with Adobe, eBay, building them.
Companies as big as that.
And there is a Zalando, we created that one. So really big enterprise partners. It's very, the reason that, the startups that we, or the companies that we're working with had huge amounts of e-commerce businesses. And we had to align, obviously, with them to access their customers. And going into European markets like Germany, for example, financing, the way they adopt financing is very different to the way an American would. So they want like it to come or recommend the financing to come recommended from a trusted source. So aligning ourselves with a big brand like Zalando, for example, made sense. So that's what we were.
And did that period, did that era for you and Wayflower, did that just come to an end naturally, or
I got made redundant.
Oh.
Yeah. And the reason for that is their sales team works so well in Wayflower and partnerships is just more long tail. And everything happened, the crash, the e-com crash happened. However, Wayflower was doing really well, but VCs had invested a lot of money in it. So the metrics and KPIs that we had to meet were huge. And it made sense for them to get rid of our, like the partnerships team, because it was too long tail for them to meet the KPIs that they needed to do really, really quickly. Whereas sales, you know, you can turn over a sale pretty quickly. You don't have to rely on a partner, building them up, getting them activated, to which might take 9 months to a year.
Is that something that you're psychologically prepared for at a high speed, move fast and break things startup, or does it come with the same kind of shock as it might for anyone else?
I would say you're prepared for it. You always think you're never. I would never feel 100% comfortable in my job, but I kind of buzz off that a bit. It gets me up in the morning.
Mm. Now, it was soon after that that you you went to the NDRC and the Founders Programme. We're going to talk about that and Glitch. But way earlier, you started in the Red Cross.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah. I studied politics and international relations in UCD. And I really wanted to go and work on the field for a charity. I wanted to do international development. I was gung-ho about it. Got a job in the Red Cross, and it just wasn't what I expected it to be. And I was the Red Cross in London is in the city of London. It's in Moorgate. And lots of my friends were working in the city. And crowdfunding was huge at the time. AB and Bev just bought Camden Hells, which was Crowdcube's biggest exit. And there was a real big buzz around it. And I was like, this is cool. I want to get involved in that. So I got him.
What had you thought the Red Cross would be?
I thought it would be easier to go and get a job on the field. Not so easy.
Okay. So you were really city bound in London.
I was sitting in an office. It just wasn't what I expected it to be. I really wanted to be on the field somewhere doing some really interesting work. Mm. But yeah, maybe I should have given it a little bit more time.
Well, it's interesting. And your partner, who I believe is Welsh.
He's Welsh, yeah.
And he took you to live in Wales for a while.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I think you worked for, is it the Welsh equivalent of the IDA or Enterprise Ireland?
Yeah. Exactly. So the company that I left the Red Cross for, I was like employee number three there. We grew it to like 12 or 15 people, pivoted loads. That's where I really started to see proper startup life. And we were meant to get investment and it just didn't happen. So Tom works for the BBC. So he got a good job as a TV director there. And he was like, I need to take this job. I kicked and screamed leaving London. And I got a job working for a part of the Welsh government that is about stimulating the ecosystem, particularly fintech. And I was there on a contract role.
And let's fast forward a bit to recent times, recent months. You met your co-founder of Glitch, Kingsley Kelly.
Yeah.
At a startup speed dating event. How does that work exactly?
So, yeah, how does it work? Who knows? I applied for Founders, and the first day they brought us in to do just like a networking event where everybody was there. There was 42 of us, I think. And they encouraged us to just chat and talk about what we were looking for in a co-founder.
Is this down in Dogpatch Labs in the CHQ building in Dublin?
Yeah, okay. It was down in Dogpatch in the vaults. And I knew what I wanted going in there.
What was that?
An absolute nerd.
as a startup.
Yeah. I wanted, because I've worked in lots of different startups and I've seen tech startups without engineering co-founders or CTOs, and they don't work as efficiently as businesses with a CTO. So I knew I wanted someone really, really technical.
So there's 42 of you, but what happens? What are the dynamics of that? How does it work?
They all put us into a room and they said, start networking and figure out who.
Right there and then.
Yeah. Who you guys want to work with. There's a few different activities that they did with us around ideation and coming up with ideas and working together in different groups. But essentially, it was meet each other. You guys, when we start the program, which was 2 weeks after the first day that we met, they said that you guys are going to have to decide on your teams, come up with an idea, validate it, and at the end of the week, decide if you want to keep on working with each other.
And you had sort of been curated a little bit anyway, hadn't you? Because there had been loads of people who'd gone in for this and you were just the final 40.
Yeah. So there was 500 or 600 people, I think. So yeah, they curated us. I imagine they had ideas of who would work well together and they encouraged us to break up and celebrate. Like, so we had a Slack channel, which is like Teams, and everyone put on the Slack channel when they were together, the project that they're working on. We used to talk to each other, have like stand-ups on the Monday. And if someone broke up, it would go back into Slack.
Someone's on the market.
Yeah, someone's on the market. Yeah, you're ready to go. But me and Kingsley met in the first day. We had those 2 weeks before we properly started the program. We met in Dogpatch, started chatting, ideating, coming up with ideas. And then when we the first week that we were in Dogpatch, we worked with three different people because they encouraged us to do it. And it was at the very end of the week, we had to decide who we were actually going to properly work with.
Right. And in Love Ireland terms, that would be the big climax, the big reveal.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
What was it that you... So you were both kind of auditioning each other.
Absolutely. Everyone was... the most intense experience of my life.
And what was it about the two of you together that suggested a startup? Did you both like each other? Did one of you have to pitch the other more?
We had a call and there's a list of questions that the guys and founders gave us around the questions you should ask your co-founder. And we went through all of those questions together, and it was about what are you interested in? What kind of business do you want to build? What's your ambition? You know, very simple questions, but really important to know if you're aligned or not. And after doing about 10 or 12 of them, we realized, oh, actually, we're really aligned in what we want to build. Something really big. We want to do something really interesting in the kind of marketing data space.
And you were coming from a commercial and e-commerce background and partnerships. He had been, I think, a senior engineer at Google.
Yeah.
In the ad space, and also at Web Summit as well.
He was head of engineering in the early days of Google. So when I say I was looking for someone, I wanted them to be super smart, really good engineering wise. I have really good experience. And also have worked in a startup. And he kind of ticked all my boxes.
Yeah.
When I was looking.
And you obviously ticked his.
Yeah.
Because what you were telling him is you want to build a big company. You have this vision. And we're going to get into what that is now. So is it too simplistic to call this ads automation for small business? Is that what Glitch is?
Yeah, I would say so. What we're doing is using AI, which is really important. He was like, make sure you say AI, but it's like using AI and automation to just simplify how businesses, not just small businesses, how businesses in general advertise across multiple different ad platforms.
Platforms meaning?
Google Ads, Meta, LinkedIn, all of the different types of ones.
Is it hard to do?
It's very difficult to do. So part of when we were coming up with the idea and trying to validate it was speaking to customers. We talked to like 300 different customers. And I would say 80% of them were really disgruntled. Like they just felt really, they just felt like they just couldn't do it. And if they couldn't do it, they went out to an agency or a consultant. And
that's really interesting. So because the whole thing that Google and Meta and all the others sell you on is how easy relatively it is and how how relatively straightforward it is for self-service. But maybe the fact that there are only two or three of them, maybe it's not as efficient as easy as it could be.
So the Google, for example, is trying to serve John down the road, who's an accountant, as well as booking.com. So
wow, they're two very different
scales.
They're two
very different types of businesses. And the experience and like internal knowledge that booking.com has is very different from what John down the road has. So it's very it's difficult to serve those types of businesses.
So you're aiming the business more at John?
No, we're aiming the business at John, but it's actually high growth scale-ups, like companies I've worked in.
Mm.
So those businesses have just raised funding. They have small marketing teams.
So, for example, that might be Wayflyer.
Wayflyer is testing a product, for example.
Mm.
And they want to advertise. The VC wants them to spend their dollars to expand and scale. They want to test new markets, but they don't want to deploy a sales team straight away there. So ads is a really good way of doing that in a cheap way. But to do it, they either hire an agency, but a lot of tech companies don't want to hire an agency. They want to keep things in-house and control, but they don't have the expertise. And most importantly, they don't have the time. So I spoke to one guy who has a startup, and his marketing team were talking to me about the process that they go through to create ads. And they did, when they were kicking it off, they did a 20-hour tutorial in each of the different ad platforms.
20 hours?
20 hours. And they still weren't able to properly create ads.
Wow.
And what we figured out was people just didn't have their website set up properly. There's things like tracking, analytics, really simple things that if you didn't know what to set them up, you just wouldn't have them set.
So a lot of people who are time poor and they're trying to run their business, they're going to think, oh my God, is there anyone who can do this for me? Is there anything that can do this for me?
Yeah. So, and it's the easiest thing I've ever had to sell to anyone.
And you say that, but when it came down to it, in the founders program, you know, there were 40 of you or 42 of you or whatever it was there. And then I think that was initially narrowed down to, was it 15 who were then competing for eight funded teams?
15 teams.
Yeah, 15 teams competing for eight fully funded teams at €100,000 in funding. And you were one of the eight.
One of the eight.
That made it,
yeah.
Yeah. So you're saying it sounds fantastic, but you still had to come up with a very, very effective pitch and a very, very compelling
model. Yeah, because
you're
still pitching. You're still pitching for money, and the founders program or NDRC or Dogpatch, whoever is investing in us, they want to make a return off this. You know, our success is their success. So they're not just going to give the money out willy-nilly. And we were in a really good position because we started on the very first day together. We had spoken to so many people and we already had an MVP, very basic. But by December, we already had done all of those different things.
And you had pretty good pedigree. You had good reference names. You're from Wayflower. He's from Google and Web Summit.
Yeah, exactly.
So all of those things. What part of pitching or in persuading somebody to look at what you have to offer or in trying to fundraise comes down from that experience of having been attached to those companies, of networking with people, knowing how to talk to them, knowing what their trigger points are, maybe what they're interested in?
So talking to the potential customers or talking to the...
Everyone.
Well, they're all... So I've always had to be chatting to customers all the time because the companies I've worked with are always evolving and always using customers as for feedback to build product. So that helped. And I knew that in order to build a legitimate product, you can't just build something that you think there's a problem for. So customers are really important. And then the partnerships thing, I've always partnered with businesses to scale and grow the companies I've worked for. So I knew that's a really good way of like expanding how we would get in front of potential customers testers and then customers. And with investors, I've partnered with VCs, angel funds, family offices. So I kind of understand.
You really know your way around.
I know how to talk to them. And I know it's a massive relationship game. And even if a VC doesn't want to invest now, it's great to make to build a relationship with them very early on so they can see how you progress. They trust you. And eventually, when you're ready to go out to them, they'll be, you know, they'll be ready to deploy the capital. You've put in the legwork. So I kind of understood that these are all the different things that you need to do.
Yeah. And let's go back to Glitch for a moment in terms of how it works. I mean, is it as simple as opening up Glitch's platform, typing in your URL, and then it gives you some degree of automation or guidance or analysis of what you should be doing? Is that how it works?
So our initial, so we're testing now, so we have an MVP. The MVP is what we're raising money off the back of to build the team out. And what that does is someone puts in their URL, the AI goes away and talks to Google, because it's connected into your Google Ads, talks to Google Ads, but also Kingsley has built an LLM around ads for these type of businesses. And based on the information it has from your website, from the wider world, from Google, it creates ads.
Okay, so it can kind of formulate what it believes from the evidence of its own large language model that it has formulated, what is likely to be most effective in the right channel
exactly.
at the right time.
And the key things that you're looking for, like optimal keywords and content that's related to your business. And it creates one campaign with five ads literally within a minute, and that goes on Google live. But the interesting thing is what we've built in as well, that so when someone might have a campaign, they might spend 5 hours creating it themselves manually and it might perform really well, but overnight it could start to dip in performance. And the person who's managing that campaign will have to go in and manually figure out why is this happening. So what we've built in is an automation tool, or the AI is analysing the campaign, and it is basically serving up to the user, hey, your campaign has decreased in performance. This is the reason why, X, Y, and Z. Are you happy for us to make those changes on your behalf? Click yes, and it automatically updates it. So we're saving people so much time right now just with the MVP. But our vision is to, we're raising 500K now to bring on more developers and predominantly developers and build the product into a multi-ad platform product, meaning that you'll come on, you put in your URL, and it will build out a strategy saying your business is X. Just say if you're Wayflyer, these are your customers, these are the personas, and these are the campaigns where you should advertise across, and this is the budget that you should
deploy. And it's
deploy.
Google Ads right now.
It's Google Ads right now. But we're moving on to LinkedIn next because we're focused on B2B businesses because they're the ones who are really underserved when it comes to tooling like this.
Yeah.
And then we'll go LinkedIn, Meta. We'll eventually go down to TikTok and Snap. And I've been talking to TikTok, Snap, Meta, all these different companies, and lots of them are struggling to retain these SME clients. And an SME in Google is someone doing an annual turnover of 50 million or less a year. So
50 million.
So it's quite, they're quite substantial businesses.
And how many people do you have using it or testing it at the moment?
So we have, I think it's like 220 on our waiting list. 60 of them are testing it, driving campaigns through it. And our plan now is to build out test cases and use those test cases to like properly build it.
And I guess you're raising money at the moment, as you say. That's mainly from angels, is it?
Yeah. So we're raising from angels predominantly. So we have some really good angels who have just started to commit. Mm. And we're going to work with Enterprise Ireland as well.
Well, Aisling, pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations on what you've done so far. And I hope Glitch goes on to do everything you say it will. I should also mention, we give a shout out to another podcast because I actually listened to it. So if you get a chance, go and listen to Store Hero for a little bit more. With Aisling, Rory Bones was on sound today, JJ Clark. Produced, and I'm Adrian Weckler, and you've been listening to The Big Tech Show. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull, that's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.